A next-gen console is only next-gen until it comes out, at which point it becomes current-gen. Kind of makes you think, doesn't it? Welcome to Triple Click, where we bring the games to you. This week, we're talking about the other now-current-gen system, the PlayStation 5. Jason's got one, and apparently it's got a cool controller. We've got a bunch of questions for him, so let's dig into it. I'm Kirk Hamilton.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Jason Schreier, and we are back. It has only been 40 years since our last episode.
I know, it's really like...
So much has happened.
I mean, 40 years is a long time. Just any way you slice it, that's a long time.
A brisk 40 years,
It's a long time for a week to last. But here we are, we made it.
And, but we're here. We're back for another week.
The 29th year of Triple Click.
Yes.
Here we are again.
And we're so glad that you're here with us. If you would like to support us making this show, we really appreciate everybody who does so. You can become a member of Maximum Fun. And to do that, you want to go to MaximumFun.org/join. And if you become a member, not only do you get to support independent media? This is a show that we own and you support, and that's it, which is very nice. You also get access to a lot of Maximum Fun bonus content, including monthly beans casts from us, in which we spill the beans on various things. This month is going to be some Mel Brooks movies. It'll be interesting. I still haven't rewatched them, but I'm looking forward to doing that.
Very exciting.
That is MaximumFun.org/join to join Team Triple Click and help us make this show.
Yes. Give us a hand. And another announcement. Maddie, you wanna give it to us? And then a cool announcement?
Here we go. We have a Triple Click Discord now.
Yeah, we do.
Which is a chat room. You don't have to be a Max Fun member or whatever to hang out in here, by the way. You can hang out if you're just a regular listener and you want to talk to other Triple Click fans. And it's pretty cool. We just launched it today. There's already a bunch of people in there. There's a bunch of channels.
It's already pretty cool. It's very true.
People are shooting the shit about the show and about video games. And it's
about the weather. It's a very nice weather channel.
About the weather, yes. There's a weather channel in there as well. It's very important. So there's...
And a weather bot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find out the weather in your area. This is why people listen to the show, and it's why they will be joining the Discord.
An important public
service.
Which
you can do by clicking on the invite link, which we're going to include in the show notes.
Yes.
And it's on our Twitter as well. So
Yes.
It's findable.
It'll be fun.
Cool. So let's get to it. So last week, because of various embargo things, we were only really able to talk about the next gen Xbox.
I like various embargo things when really there was one embargo on the PS5.
That's true. Although no, there were a bunch of software embargoes, because there was an Assassin's Creed, there was a Bugsnax embargo. So it's a bunch of embargoes. But anyway, this week we can talk about everything. I've been playing the PlayStation 5 for about 3 weeks now. And I have many thoughts
on
that. I'm the only one of the three of us. So this might be you guys asking me some questions. But just to kind of sum up like some high-level thoughts on the new PlayStation, I think it's an impressive machine, just like the Xbox is. Very impressed by the controller, which has a lot of bells and whistles, a lot of gimmicks that so far have seemed to me like they actually changed the way it feels to play games.
I keep hearing that, and I totally want to grill you about it because I'm so into controllers, but we'll get into it
in a second. But overall, my thought remains similar to what I said about the Xbox, that most people really do not need to make the upgrade right now. Mm-hmm. If you have a spare $500 and you really want to play Demon's Souls, then go ahead. If you want to play a lot of the other games, you can get them all on your PlayStation 4. Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Bugsnax, all the other cool stuff that's on PS5 right now, you can get on your PS4. That
or you can get Demon's Souls on a PS3 if you want. I mean, Yes, that's true.
Yes, Demon's Souls on PS3 is not quite the same experience. By the way,
who's to say?
Who's to say? Not me, because that's the one game I didn't get early.
That's right.
So I have not been able to check that one out yet. So all that said, some people were, when I posted my reviews last week and I was talking about the console, or earlier this week and I was talking about the consoles a little bit. No, it was last week. Man, this all blends together. All time has just like blended together.
40 years. I mean, it's a long time to keep straight in your head.
Five 40 minutes. Years. months ago when you posted your console review.
The amount of time that I have spent looking at just a wall of red and blue states over the past week is just like, man, I'll never get those hours back.
Nope, you won't. Yep. None of us will.
Anyway, at least John King on CNN was very entertaining while we did it. Anyway, so I got some pushback from people who were like, what if I only had a PS4 original, never got a PS4 Pro, don't have a computer, and I want all the performance upgrades? Okay, then great. Like, why not upgrade right now?
Sure.
If you know you're going to, just recognize, I think the rationale behind me saying to hold off is that with both of these things, you're not buying something amazing right now. You're buying something that will be amazing down the road as they boost up their libraries. And oftentimes it's worth it to wait because you can get a discount on these things if you wait a few months or a year.
It's funny that people would push back on you just because I know we've given this advice a lot of times, and just you're not the boss of them. I mean, if you want to buy a PS5, go for it. Like, you can take Jason's advice or not.
Do you need us to give you permission to buy a PS5? Because we will grant it to you.
Yeah. I think people do like the validation of like being told, so. Like, actually, this is a good purchase. So,
I know. That's why they push back, for sure.
Yeah. And it's a big purchase. You want your best friend Jason Trier to tell you it's okay.
Exactly. Your bestie's a triple click. But I do think that if you haven't made the upgrade at all, if you're still stuck on the PS4, you're not interested, or you can't afford to get into PC gaming, but you have $500 to spend on a PS5, do it by all means. Like, go ahead and make sure, if you're kind of trying to decide which console to go with, so far from what we've seen, and we don't have all the information on like the power differences and what that will actually mean for third party games. Because we haven't actually been able to test a lot of games on both consoles. I just started getting a couple of codes in today that I could test on both, but I haven't even had a chance to. So, and even now, like, we won't know what's going to happen a year or 2 years from now as games get more advanced. And like, what if they struggle to run at 60 frames a second on the PS5, but they run great on the Xbox? We're not sure yet. We don't know yet. But if you're trying to decide right now and you want to buy a new console, you want to know which one to go with, look up which one is getting, which one will have more games that you want, whether it's like the Xbox Game Pass lineup, Bethesda games and Microsoft games and Gears and all that jazz, which you can get on the Xbox, or the PS5's like giant stable of first party games, God of War and Horizon 2 and all that jazz, plus their third party
looking better exclusives. Than on the PS4.
Yeah exactly. Mm-hmm. And then like Final Fantasy 16, which would probably be my selling point if I hadn't gotten the consoles ready, and then like some other random third party exclusives like from Square Enix and Capcom and whatnot. Resident Evil. No, that was announced for Xbox too. But those are kind of my high level thoughts. To the broader consumer out there, it's probably worth waiting. To the person who really wants to upgrade, go for it. These are great machines from what I've seen so far. Like, there's no fatal flaw, which I think one of you predicted that there would be some fatal flaw. Was it Maddie who predicted there would be some?
I think I predicted there would be a controversy with one or the other console. I would say I lost that bet. And I think that the controversies of 2020 have had nothing to do with console launches.
I mean, there's still time. There still could be a controversy.
That's so true. I could still win that prediction, I guess. I don't know what it would be, but... Yeah.
Overall, both of these consoles, and I'm talking about the Series X here, not the S, not the baby Xbox, adult Xbox versus PS5, both of them are really impressive. Like, both of them do exactly what they deliver. And you just have to kind of decide, do I want to err towards Xbox Game Pass or Sony first-party exclusives? That's really the main choice you're making. All that said, let's get into some specifics. So, Kirk, you wanted to grill me about the controller.
Yeah.
Hit me. Give me your best punches.
I don't have a lot of punches. Wait, I'm grilling you.
Does it have buttons? Does it have a pad?
I'm grilling
on top?
You. I'm not punching you. This is let's not mix our metaphors.
Okay, you want to put me on a grill, flip me over a couple of times,
yes,
get me nice
absolutely.
And juicy.
Absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not overcooked, just like just a little bit.
Raw Jason.
Can I get
medium
your
Jason?
Can I get your flame-kissed description of just what is different about this controller?
Okay, so there are two main things, and it's got a lot. It has like a microphone and a speaker like before, and a bunch of other like random little things. Glowy lights that look a little different than the PS4 controller does, and it feels comfortable.
It's shaped
two main
differently,
things.
Yeah.
Yes, it is shaped a little differently. It's a little heavier. It's got more going on the inside, so it's a little heavier. So two main things, right? Number one is the adaptive triggers. And the way that works is, as you're pulling the triggers, they can change like different levels of resistance depending on what you're doing in a game. So if I'm like firing a gun, it could feel a little more difficult if I like run out of ammo, suddenly the trigger will lock or something like that. Or like you're swinging in Spider-Man and you'll have to like press it and then give it a little oomph at the end of a web swing or something like that. There's a lot of like little things that really make a difference and feel kind of unusual. And sometimes it can get a little bit like, okay, enough with this. But most of the time I found that it's really cool and my hands feel kind of strange when I put it down. Like when it's just like a weird sensation that is interesting. It feels next gen in a way that nothing else does. Both of these consoles feel like iterative upgrades in so many ways. And the controller really is the one thing that like puts it over the top as far as innovation. The other thing is called haptic feedback or some nonsense like that.
Yeah.
And basically means advanced rumble. So instead of just like rumbling or not rumbling, there are different kinds of rumbles and there are rumble sensors all throughout the controller that can like go off in different ways. So you might feel it on one hand, but not the other. You might feel it lightly. There's a game called Astro's Playroom that ships inside of every PS5. And it's actually surprisingly fun for like a built-in game. It's actually pretty cool.
Just to point out, to give those devs credit. Yeah, they made the Astrobot Rescue Mission, which is one of the best VR games I've like ever played. And it does feel surprising, even though at this point it shouldn't be, just because clearly very talented people make those games. But anyways, carry on.
Yeah, so this game really just like goes all out with all the controller stuff, almost to an annoying degree, because there's some motion control stuff that's just like, I don't want to
It's like
be
one of those Kinect things that's
right
meant
now.
To wow you with the
be
new technology.
Showcase.
Yes,
yeah.
But it's fun. Yeah. But it's more fun than like your average tech demo game. The motion controls I could do without, but the feedback is actually really cool. So you're like, you'll feel light sensations as you're running, but then you'll like run into water or run on like a moving platform and it'll get heavier, or like you'll run into grass and it'll rumble a little more while you're walking through the grass. It does some cool things. I tested around with it. It does some things in like Devil May Cry 5. Like it feels pretty cool when it rumbles and you're hitting people. They do some things with it in NBA 2K, which is actually pretty cool. Like the trigger will start like getting really intense when you're like guarding someone on defense. It'll like feel a little squishier, or not squishy, the opposite of squishy. It'll feel a little harder and like rumble, and as you're playing more intense defense, it's actually really cool. I am really enjoying it.
So I'm thinking of the Xbox One controller, which also had advanced rumble, and I also am thinking of, do you remember it was the Nintendo demonstration of the Joy-Con where they had ice cubes falling into a cup? And
HD rumble.
HD rumble. So this has been something that other people have experimented with, and for me it was always Forza with the Xbox One, where you can really feel the tires kind of kissing the road and then coming up a little bit as you're going on a turn on the right or left trigger. A few other games had it. I actually remember Tomb Raider had a thing with like the bowstring. You could really feel it rumble.
Yeah, that would be where you could really use it.
This is different. This is completely different than anything like that.
No, I know. I'm going somewhere with this. This isn't randomly reminiscing about controller rumble. I'm sure it's different. Like it sounds like this controller is pretty amazing. I'm more just thinking this has been a long time coming and sort of charting this point on the long development of this kind of technology, and hoping that it becomes kind of standardized, just because it's always siloed on one console or the other. And as a result, you don't get the widespread adoption that would be really cool, where you do get like the Spider-Man web thing, which sounds really cool, but you don't get it if you're playing, I don't know, whatever, the Avengers and you're being Black Widow, which is like a very similar kind of move, but the game doesn't take advantage of that, maybe because it's cross-platform. And I don't know. So I kind of wish that more people would just take notes from one another and they would be a little more open about it and it could become more standardized.
Well, so some third-party games that are cross-platform will use it, like NBA, which I mentioned, and Bugsnax uses it quite a bit, which is also cool. I'll talk about Bugsnax in a minute. But one thing I wanted to point out to this point is that, having played a lot on both the Xbox and the PlayStation 5, the Xbox feels very sterile and like utilitarian. It's very much like, you turn this on, it's very sleek, it's very Microsoft, it's very much like, play your games, get your Xbox Game Pass, like, do what you're going to do. The PlayStation has a little bit more of that Nintendo charm to it all, between Astro's Playroom and a lot of other just like little touches. The controller itself has these little tiny bumps that, like, if you look really close at them, are actually like the PlayStation icons, the X and square and circle and triangle. The, like, when you're navigating on the dashboard, you can like access these little activity cards that'll show you like how much of a mission you've beaten, and it'll let you see your progress and trophies and whatnot. And it just does some neat things that, and even including Astro's Playroom in the first place, which is a game that's all about like collecting PlayStation history. It's very much, it just feels like a console that, I don't know, has more joy to it. That's not ultimately in the long run, you want a console that just plays games really well, but it is something that I notice. Like, this feels more Nintendo than the Xbox.
There's something to that. I mean, that was even a complaint with the Switch, was that it was kind of missing a little bit of that Nintendo pizzazz when it first came out, and still kind of is pretty standard, like kind of just an operating system.
Yeah, I just want to point out that my baby was crawling in the background of my Zoom call and then flopped on her floor.
I was trying to finish
floor,
that point, and I was like, oh God, did she just fall?
No, but she didn't. She didn't hurt herself. It was a cute flop.
If I trailed off at the end of that sentence, it was because I was in mortal fear of your daughter's life.
Her little flop. Yes. So yeah, I mean, it's something to consider, and I think that the controller itself just kind of plays into that, where they're like, "Here's our big innovation this time around." And yeah, it remains to be seen what people will do with it. But like, if this was Xbox, then it would be more like, okay, most of what I'm playing here is third party, at least for the foreseeable future, until Microsoft's stable of game studios that they purchase actually start delivering some stuff that's Xbox exclusive. But Sony, we know, has a ton of first party stuff that is all going to utilize the controller's various bells and whistles. So like in God of War 2 and Horizon 2, like that, you know that they're going to be using the stuff.
There's going to be a bowstring.
There is
going to
be a bowstring.
It's
going to be, yeah.
That really, I mean, I'm such a controller nerd that does make me excited about when I eventually do buy a PS5.
Yeah, so I haven't done extensive testing, but I did plug it into to my PC just to see what would happen, and it didn't seem to work with anything, any of the games that I tried.
No drivers yet, I don't think.
Yeah,
I could see them adding some, but...
No, they will.
Probably
not
for everything.
They did for the DualShock 4, but if they don't, then someone will make a... There's a great tool on PC called DualShock 4 for Windows that lets you play any game with the DualShock 4. So someone will do that for the DualSense. That's what this one is called.
Now we just need to put... Can you do the under buttons? Do you know whether that under button attachment works on the DualSense?
I do not know. Yeah,
it must.
I'm not sure.
Or they're going to make one that will. Because I got to have my under buttons with my adapters.
Yeah, I don't know. We got a... they released a PS4 controller with under buttons, so I'm sure they'll do the same thing.
It's an attachment for the PS4.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if that works with this one. We got a couple questions about the battery life on this thing. So the Xbox controller, like I mentioned last week, has two AAA or AA batteries. The PS5 controller just plugs into the system like the PS4 controller did. I found the battery life to be pretty good. I think it runs out a lot more quickly when it's playing like Astro's Playroom or one of those games that uses everything, because that drains the battery faster, but... it seems so far pretty good. I mean, I've been playing for a few hours without plugging it in, and it seems to run fine. Other people have asked, one of the top questions that I've gotten is, does Bloodborne run at 60 frames a second now? Literally, as soon as I got the PlayStation 5 in the mail, the first thing I did was grab my Bloodborne disc and pop it in.
Yeah.
Loaded it up. It seemed to load like a tiny bit faster, but not really. Loaded in, and it's just like, looks like garbage. 30 frames a second, less than 30 frames a second, choppy as hell. Yeah, not a single improvement on Bloodborne.
But then you wind up accidentally playing 12 hours of Bloodborne, anyways.
Yeah, and it's the same game, but
still
hey,
great.
You know, it's Bloodborne.
Well, what's interesting is that a lot of other Sony games do get enhancements. God of War is running, and if you choose, you can choose between like performance mode and high fidelity mode, or whatever it's called, graphic mode. And performance mode, 60 frames a second, which is amazing. Like, I want to replay God of War just for
that
reason.
Bloodborne, it's just like a bag of cats under the surface.
Well, I wonder if... So there were rumors a while back about a remaster. I hadn't personally been able to corroborate any of that stuff or heard anything about it. And in fact, was told, like, I mean... I hate to say that something isn't true, because people I ask might just not know about it, but I asked someone and they're like, no, I've never heard of anything like that. Someone who might know. That said, maybe they're not doing enhancements because there will be a remaster at some point in the future. I don't know. Or maybe they don't care. Maybe From Software is like, quiet, we're busy. Like,
just too
trying
busy
to,
on Elden Ring. You know?
We're busy waiting for George R. R. Martin to write us a draft so we can actually ship
Sending
Elden
him
Ring.
Email after email, begging him to respond.
Please. Please, yeah. please respond. Please stop blogging
commenting
about
on
the
his
Jets.
Live journal. Yeah.
So yeah, but God of War runs really well. Ghost of Tsushima also runs at 60 frames a second, from what I can tell. And again, this is all me eyeballing it, I should say. So I like.
But you have a good eye for frames per second. 60... You're obsessed with it, so I trust you.
But I can't tell if something is like actually 50 frames a second.
Sure.
Or even a lot of people were asking me, because I'm playing a lot of this stuff on my monitor, which is A, 1440p and B, 144 frames hertz. Mm-hmm. So it could theoretically run games at 144 frames a second. I really can't tell.
Or at least like 90 or 120. You can't tell and no one can tell. I looked up a lot of stuff about the refresh rate of the human eye when I was reviewing that video card, and past a certain point, no one can actually tell the
difference. Kirk has told me he can.
I mean, not...
Can you tell the difference between 90 and 120?
90 and 120? Okay. 90 and 120, maybe
you can
not.
Train your eye. I mean, some of it is training your eye, but the higher it gets... the more difficult it is for us mere mortals to tell.
I think 60 and 120, I can. I think that once you get up to 90, it just starts to feel pretty smooth. But if I've been playing a game like Overwatch or something that is like really fast and also can run really fast on my PC, and I'm playing at 60 frames per second, and then suddenly I like unlock something on my monitor or change a setting and it lets it play at 120, it's noticeable to me that the difference, but that's because they're kind of right next to each other. But if you just sat me down in front of a game and one was running at 90 or maybe it was running at 120, we're like, which is it? I would maybe struggle to tell you.
Okay, well, that's where I'm at with the PS5, because I can't compare some of this stuff to other stuff, except for like comparing it on PS4 to comparing it on PS5. And then when it's like 30 versus 60, it's very clear. Like the difference is very clear to me. But 60 and above, I really would have no way of knowing. And same with the resolution. Like when I'm playing Assassin's Creed, which I've been playing the most, and I'll talk about more a little bit later on, but I've been playing that on Xbox. But regardless, I can't tell if it's running at like 1440p or 4K downscaled,
whereas
or whatever
I feel
else.
Like I can, but you can. Wear glasses and I don't, so I mean there's any number of factors here. I have no
who
idea
knows? Who knows. Point being that like there's going to be some great stuff. Like I said, there's already some great stuff on Digital Foundry. If you want like the really technical stuff answered, that's your
Digital
place.
Digital Foundry.
Yeah, this
just
is not
check out those
this
videos.
Is not the best place for that.
Triple Click is not really your podcast if that's what you're looking for.
Because there was a story that like the PS5 can't output a natural 1440p, so people were wondering how it looked on my monitors. All I'll say is that playing Spider-Man, Bugsnax, all these games looks great on my monitor. Even if it's not natural 1440p, it looks awesome.
It's upscaling and it's fine. Yeah.
So let me talk about some of these games, because I know you guys are curious about Spider-Man and Bugsnax. I want to talk about Bugsnax first. Don't sleep on Bugsnax, you guys.
I played some Bugsnax.
You played some, okay. Oh, yeah. So I finished this game, and it is wild. It is a wild video game. So Bugsnax is a game.
I've heard it goes places.
Bugsnax, it kind of went viral when it was announced at the PS5 showcase over the summer. It is a game, it's sort of like Pokemon Snap. You're sent to this island, you're a journalist, you're sent to this island that is full of these creatures called Bugsnax that are like little insects made out of food. There's like a spider made out of french fries. There's like a little hamburger cockroach thing that's called Bunger and goes Bunger, Bunger, Bunger. They all say their
names. I would
names.
Describe it as Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs meets Pokemon. That's Pokemon, like kind of the vibe that I would describe for this game.
But there's a lot of Pokemon Snap in there, because you're not taking photos, but you're using your camera to zoom in on these Bugsnax and identify them, and then you have to figure out how to catch them. So it's very much a puzzle game. It's very much like a chaotic physics puzzle game where you're setting traps and using your variety of tools to figure out the best way to catch one. Like one of them might be really into ketchup, so you use your sauce shooter to shoot ketchup on the ground and then set a trap for them.
The Bunger. Aww. Bunger, 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 Bunger. They all say their name. That's the best thing about this game is that they say Strabby.
The best thing about this game is actually the cast of characters, because as you go, you like wind up trying to get all these characters, these grumps, I think they're called. I forget the exact name. To come back to their village, and they're all like incredible characters. They're all kind of like have their own. It reminds me of Lost almost. They all have their own like archetype. Like,
everything reminds you of Lost.
It does. That's true. That's true.
And it's like a family-friendly Pokemon version of Lost. It's exactly like Lost.
It's a bunch of people. Each person is like a type, and they're on an island together.
And they're all
they have
on
to
a
build
journey
a society.
Of self-discovery. Yeah.
It's not illegitimate, the comparison. and the island, there are mysteries surrounding the island, and they have to figure out.
And there are
out,
these numbers that keep popping up. There's a hatch. No, right. I don't know. I haven't played this game.
There's a smoke monster. There's a big weird statue and a polar bear.
But the characters are like, they really grow on you and charm you, and they all have voices.
Great voice acting, even from what I've played, yeah.
Great voice acting. Really fantastic voice acting. And the goal is to track down this woman named Lisbert, and she is the archaeologist who is kind of the leader of the village, and then she disappeared, and she has this great Australian accent, and you can find this footage of her as you're trying to track down the mystery of where she went, and she's adorable. It's all fantastic. I love this game. And then the ending of the game is just so batshit and like
say
wild.
Nothing else.
I won't say anything else, but I finished it last night and very much enjoyed it. It's a perfect game to play with kids, by the way. I wish my kid was a little bit older, and maybe when she is a little bit older, I'll let her play this game, because it's just perfect for a kid to watch and play and enjoy. It might get a little spooky for them at some points, but other than that, the actual catching is really fun. There's some parts that are tedious, some parts of like catching the bug snacks that can get a little bit like, all right, do I really have to repeat this motion? Do I really have to run across the island again? That said, it's really fun. I really enjoy it. And then I've also been playing a bunch of Spider-Man Miles Morales, which is another really cool game.
I'm excited for this game. Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It's more Spider-Man. Not a lot has changed from the 2018 Spider-Man game. So if you're expecting like some drastically different combat system or swinging system, you're not going to get it here. But it looks great at 60 frames a second. The story is really cool. Miles Morales is like this lovable geek. He is so incredibly like dorky and awkward that it is fun to play as him. And his story is really fun. It's just a really fun story and really good. The writing is great. If you like the first Spider-Man, you're going to like this. It's just more of that. It's like 8 to 10 hours more of that. I'm not quite done with the campaign yet because I spent a lot of time just like swinging around the city.
I think that's about how long it is though from my several coworkers
are saying. This is one case where performance can make a big difference, because swinging around at 60 frames a second feels so much better than it does at 30 frames a second.
Yeah, I'm still... It's a challenge when games that are really cinematic, like Spider-Man, which seamlessly go between gameplay and cinematics in that kind of Naughty Dog way that now Sony has kind of made into a house style. When they're at 60 frames per second, there are times, for me anyways, where I think the cutscenes look weird, where the game looks great. And I wish there were a way for them to pivot while doing those extremely slick in-engine cutscenes, but I just don't know if there is.
For what it's worth, I have not noticed that at all.
Yeah, like, is the frame rate different, or is it the same?
No, it's the same. The cutscenes for me, I mean, they just seem like part of, because they're that seamless thing you talk about where there's nothing pre-rendered or anything, it doesn't feel like it's taking you to a different world for the cutscenes. It all just feels like it's part of the game.
Right. I'm thinking back. So I'm basing this on the next gen version of The Last of Us that came out, and that was the main one for me. And then the Uncharted games.
You mean
as
the PS4 version? Yeah, of the PS3.
Right. From their next gen, from their current gen.
Right. Right. Because, last gen, next gen.
Right. Because those cutscenes looked weird. Like, I think that The Last of Us actually looks very strange at 60 frames per second. I think The Last of Us Part 2 would have been weird too. And this is a personal thing. This is not something that bothers everybody, but it is a thing for me that as I watch these very cinematic games getting up to 60 frames per second, part of me is like, yeah, the game looks great at 60 FPS and I'd love to do the gameplay parts at a higher frame rate, but then the cutscenes happen and it's weird and everything looks hyper real in that kind of high frame rate Hobbit in the theaters kind of a way.
Yeah.
And that always weirds me out. Like when you're watching Joel emote over his like dead daughter and it looks like these weird mannequins or like puppets are being moved because it looks so real. And I'm like, I do not like this.
And then you start playing as Joel and you're like, oh, it's Joel. Oh, he's
right,
back.
This is great.
Phew.
This is fine. Yeah. So that's actually an interesting challenge that I guess it's not true for everybody, since I know there are people who just don't care. But I wonder if that's going to be a thing.
Yeah, I'd be curious if you felt the same way playing Spider-Man Miles Morales.
I probably will.
Yeah, are you going to play the PS4 version, Kirk?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, like that's the thing. I guess it'll be irrelevant because I'm going to...
Well, that I think is just 30.
I think it's just all 30.
Or it's 30 all across the board. So, yeah. So then it'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, other things are like the loading times are great, just like with the Xbox. Both of these machines just have uber fast loading times, and just like turning on the console is super fast, and actually getting into the games at Super Miles Morales, it's hilarious. You get to the menu screen and like you press continue and you don't even have time to like look down at your phone before you're in the game. It's like, it's one of those things that will really cut down on your bathroom.
You can't look at your phone anymore. It's terrible. Man, you Twitter can't even look at a tweet.
We'll
it's
be down. Just... Yeah. Is there other stuff you guys are curious about as far as these new, as far as the PS5 or the Xbox?
Where'd you put it in your apartment? It looks really big. How's that going for you?
Yeah. How did you get it into your apartment for starters?
Yeah. Well, they had to cut open the door to wire it to allow the PS5.
You had to bring in piano movers.
So I have my PS5 and my Xbox both next to my computer, which is actually good for a few reasons. One being that I can play my monitor right next to me, which is great. But two being that I can feel when one of them is running hot or hear when one of them is getting loud. And in my experience, the Xbox can get hot, but not like noticeably like, oh my God, I have to turn on the air conditioning while I'm sitting here. Just like, okay, it's got some heat. The PS5 has not gotten hot at all. And both of them are super quiet. Like occasionally you'll hear, especially when you're starting them up. Right. Yeah, for now. But occasionally you'll hear when you're starting them up, you might hear some rumbling. But like compared to the PlayStation 4, they are both just like uber like silent as you're playing most games. So that has been impressive so far.
Yeah, I look forward to the jet engine sounds it makes when I play God of War 2 on it in a year.
God, yeah, who knows? I mean, yeah, that's the thing. With these things, you're buying potential. I do wonder, so something that has made me a little bit worried is that both of these things, Microsoft has said future games, like for the next year or two, all of our games will also be cross-gen on Xbox One as well. Sony has come out and said similar things where they're like, we want a lot of our games on PS4 as well. We saw that with Spider-Man. We're seeing that with Horizon 2. Haven't seen that with Demon's Souls for whatever reason, but it seems to be the case for a lot of Sony's games. And so I worry that if a lot of people are going cross-gen, especially third parties also, they're not going to be able to take advantage of what the solid-state drive can do from like a design point of view. And before these consoles launched, I had been talking to developers who were raving about the PS5 and to a lesser extent the Xbox, but more so the PS5, particularly about what the solid state drive can bring, not just from a loading screen perspective, but from a design perspective. And they were saying like, it's hard to explain, but like the way that things load and the way that we keep track of various points of memory in the database, like we could allow for so much more, so many different things. And like, it'll be interesting to see what designers can do when they're not as constrained by certain things. And if they can be a little more creative with the ways that open worlds work or the ways that interiors of open worlds work, et cetera, et cetera. But if all these games are going to be cross-gen, then it might be many years before we actually see any of that in action, if we ever do. And that is kind of unfortunate. And that is, in that way, like it feels even more like just an iterative thing as opposed to a clean next generation, where it's like, okay, this is the same game on both platforms, but it's going to be 60 frames a second on the PS5 and 30 on the PS4. So that's kind of a bummer. I was looking forward to more.
I'm sure you've heard, though, there are some notable differences with Spider-Man on PS4. Like, there are entire loading screens that are only in the PS4 version that you've perhaps never seen, where Miles gets on the subway.
But I'm not talking about loading screens. I'm very specifically talking.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's a notable difference. Like, those loading screens don't have to be there on PS5 because obviously they can go ahead and render the next environment without ever needing to show Miles traveling somewhere in a beautifully rendered loading screen that only a PS4 person gets to see. So I can imagine in my head that other developers in the future would also be creating games that have to run on the PS4 and they just are designing different loading screens, or you're just standing somewhere waiting and watching a twirling circle if you're playing on PS4. But on PS5, you have no idea that that's happening to other people. And then that's kind of crappy if you're still on last gen, but I also feel like that's what you would expect if you're
Not talking about loading times. I'm talking about like what can actually be done with the design of the game, like the procedural generation of the landscape that allows for things to come up in different, there's technical stuff that is way over my head, but the developers have raved about to me, and I listen to them. I listen to people who are smarter than me about these things when they talk to me, and they've said that with the solid state drive you can do some things that you might not be able to do otherwise on RJ.
You know, I have a question. Is the solid state drive in the PS5 or the Xbox, the big
well, they all have
the big adult Xbox
drive,
you know, no, right, is that drive in some fundamental way different from a drive that I could buy for my PC? Because I am curious if all of these things on cross-gen games, if someone makes a game that's like next-gen only or, you know, PS5, Xbox, Series X only, and there's also a PC version, can the PC version do the same thing? Like, can you get a hard drive that can do the same thing for a PC? I'm almost certain that if you can't, you eventually, you will be able to, and then there'll probably be something even faster on PC. But that, I am also, like, that parity is, so far has always existed, and PC usually outperforms consoles. I'm assuming that that will hold, but this one thing does seem a little different to me, at least for now.
You can't right now, and the PS5's solid-state drive has faster, like, streaming, loading in and out. Again, we're talking about stuff that's a little bit over our heads here, but my understanding is that the PS5 solid-state drive, like, allows for data streaming a lot more quickly than your average solid-state drive that you can buy on the market that I have in my computer right now.
Okay, so at least for now, the PS5 kind of has this unique thing.
Yeah. All right. So before we go back to one more thing, before we take a break, go to one more thing. Any other questions for you guys? Anything else you're curious about with the PS5? I know we got some listener questions. I hope I answered a bunch of them or most of them. Some of them were more technical, more on the technical end, and so we can't really answer, but hopefully someone will be able to answer for people. The one thing I will say is that I wish there was a clearer way to know whether a PS4 game would run better on the PS5. Right now, there isn't. There isn't like an enhanced for PS5 label or anything like that. So
Xbox has kind of that.
Xbox does have that. Or they just added that, I believe. So they just added
it.
It is
very nice, I have to admit.
Super
like looking
nice.
At all your icons and just seeing like, oh, these are the ones that are enhanced and these are the ones that aren't.
These are the ones worth checking out. Yep, especially with Game Pass, because you can be like, oh, I'm going to download this one because it's better. Yeah, PS5 does not have that, at least right now. Maybe they'll add something
maybe they'll
at
add
some
it,
point.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys are curious about, or should we take a break?
No. Okay.
Cool, let's take a break, and we'll be back with one more thing.
Listen, I'm a hotshot Hollywood movie producer. You have until I finish my glass of kombucha to pitch me your idea. Go.
All right, it's called Who Shot Ya? A movie podcast that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes. I'm Iffy Whiteyway, the new host of the show and a certified BBN.
BBN?
Buff black nerd.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, an elderly gay and legit film critic who wrote a book on Christmas movies.
I'm Drea Clark, a loud white lady from Minnesota.
Each week, we talk about a new movie in theaters and all the important issues going on in the film industry.
It's like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets Cruising.
And if it helps seal the deal, I can flex my muscles while we record each episode.
I'm sorry, this is a podcast? I'm a movie producer. How did you get in here?
Iffy, quick, start flexing.
Bicep, lats, chest. Who Shot Ya? Dropping every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye!
And we're back for one more thing. Jason, what's your one more thing this week?
Oh, man. Well, I've been talking for a while, so what's
keep
a little
going.
Bit more?
What's a little bit more? I'm really testing your endurance here.
So one more thing is Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I started playing on the Xbox Series S a couple of weeks ago and have now somehow gotten 30 hours into because I love this game. I really love
I've
it.
I've played almost that much too. So I'm partly throwing you because I've played a ton of this game as well and have a lot of thoughts so I can back you up.
Okay, so I should say, so this week it's my one more thing. Next week we're going to do an episode where the three of us play it and that'll be, we're going to do a triple play.
Yeah, you two will have beaten it by then, I guess.
I don't think so. This game is super long because just when you think like, okay, I'm really making some progress on the map, it's like, oh, here's another map for you to explore.
I'm kind of nowhere.
There's yeah, a lot of great stuff in here. Yeah, this game is huge. And on top of like the main story stuff, there's also the entire like order assassination tree from the last game, mm-hmm. which is awesome and so much fun to do. But still, it's a lot to do. All right, so where do I even start with this game? So Assassin's Creed, as most people know, started off as like an action stealth series and then became more RPG-ish with starting with 2017's Assassin's Creed Origins, which was the Egypt one that started adding RPG stuff. Dialogue trees came in at some point with Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
There weren't dialogue trees in, yeah, that was an Odyssey, not Origins.
With Assassin's Creed Odyssey, there was levels and equipment and gear and quests and all this other stuff started coming into these games. Assassin's Creed Valhalla actually winds some of that stuff back. So like there's in the first two games of this kind of trilogy, there's a ton of gear that you find and you're constantly getting upgrades. Some of them are color coded with like epic and legendary and blah blah blah. It feels like a typical RPG. In this game, there's a lot less gear and it's more like, okay, this is the gear I'm going to stick with. There's gear, you upgrade that gear, and there's like sets of gear that you stick with for a while, and it's more, it's less like a lootathon and more like a tailored experience. Same with quests. There are no more side quests in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Instead, you explore the world and you find these little dots, these little, they're white, gold, and blue dots. The white dots are artifacts, the gold dots are treasure, and the blue dots are these little mysteries, which you find, and they're little side quests. They're very contained. They're more like encounters in like a Rockstar game, in the Red Dead Redemption 2. This game is actually very reminiscent of Red Dead Redemption 2 in a lot of ways. So a lot of these are just really cool and interesting and hilarious and super weird. And you just kind of find them organically, almost as if you're playing an exploration game, a Breath of the Wild type of game. It also adds back a lot of the sneaking stuff that people missed. There was sneaking in the last few games, but they removed the ability to instant kill a lot of abilities, or a lot of enemies, especially if those enemies were higher level than you. Now you can go back to instant killing, and you can even get an ability that lets you instant kill like bosses and super high level enemies if you want. And it does a lot of stuff like that. It also brings back a lot of like the modern time stuff. It includes that more in a more heavy way than previous games did. So it feels very much like, okay, we hear you old school Assassin's Creed fans, and we want to bring you back to this series if you didn't like the last two. But it still has a lot of the things that I personally loved about the last couple of games. It still has a map where it's like broken into regions, and you go to each region and you clear it out and you do things for people, and it has its own kind of self-contained story that's part of the larger story. It still has a lot of just like cool, interesting choices and dialogue. It still has a lot of the supernatural stuff that was introduced. Well, I guess supernatural stuff has always been there, but especially in Odyssey with like yeah. the mythology and the Fate of Atlantis expansion, they are really doubling down on the supernatural stuff for this one. You will see a lot of Norse gods in this game, or you will hear a lot from Odin, the head of the Norse gods. And yeah, I really love it. It's really well written. It's really fun. There's this great loop to the game where you're going off and like exploring and finding treasure, and then you bring it back to your settlement and you can build things within your settlement, and you can go on raids with like your crew of your Vikings and go just maraud castles and monasteries and stuff. You don't kill civilians, fortunately. You can't kill civilians. Still a lot of unethical Viking raiding here, but it's a Viking game. The game has not, Kirk and I were talking about this a little bit the other day, the game has not yet like confronted the question of like, hey, wait a minute, is our whole lifestyle kind of immoral? But maybe it will at some point. The story is surprisingly compelling. I guess not surprisingly, given that the last couple of games have been too. But the story has been really gripping for me. It's about your main character is named Eivor, and it's about his or her family and relationships and kind of saga alongside their brother Sigurd, who has his own problems, and there's a lot of interesting stuff between the two of them. And yeah, the rhythm of exploring and finding these dots has just been super compelling to me. And
gotta find those
dots. I love it.
Nice. Yeah, I'll talk about it more next week. The jury's a little more out for me on some parts of it, just like the gameplay parts. It's just a little too easy, a little flat at times, I guess, playing it. I don't know. I'm still finding my groove with it. I've played a lot of it.
Challenge some of those zealots if you think it's too easy. Challenge some of those high-level zealots.
Yeah, but like really high-level enemies are hard in a way that I don't love. It's just like there's something to the combat, which has been true for a while, ever since they started trying to make it this like animation locked, more like Sekiro or Bloodborne or Demon Souls, like that style of combat, which they did in Origins. They started introducing this, but it's never quite felt the same as those games. Like when you play Neo 2, that's like, okay, these people really know combat and have got it locked in. And Assassin's Creed still has that kind of funky rubber band feeling to it at times. Plus, there's just like AI stuff, like in the fights and in the stealth in particular.
Well, so that's the big downside to this game is the glitches and the wonkiness. It feels jankier to me than previous
games. I don't think of the AI stuff as glitching for what it's worth. It's just the AI is dumb. Like I just
think of it as overall jankiness. Like the game just feels janky. Like it's a combination of, okay, I'm doing this big raid and there are all of my allies fighting enemies around me and everyone's just standing around staring at each other.
There's a lot of that kind
and, but it's a combo, but it's a combination of that and also like, oh my god, my character disappeared. I have to reload the game because I can't see my character anymore because I tried to fake death and then a cutscene loaded and then I glitched out. It's like a combination of that that just makes it feel janky in general, I would say.
Yeah, anyways, it's just sort of not like I really like it. I really like Darby McDevitt, the narrative director on this game. He was like on Black Flag and Revelations, two Assassin's Creed games I really liked. And this has that same kind of feeling where it's going to slowly sprawl out and build into this thing that really works. It's just, you know, I don't like Eivor as much as I liked Cassandra. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah,
and the setting is
definitely
cool.
True.
But like, Dark Ages England looks a lot like The Witcher 3. It looks like a lot of games I've played before where like ancient Greece and ancient Egypt, it was like amazing everywhere I was going. I was seeing amazing things. So it's, you know, I'm chewing on it, but
there's other stuff in this game that looks amazing.
So it is, there's a lot more variety. I'll suggest if people are going to play this, let the animus choose whether you're going to be male or female Eivor. It doesn't seem like you should choose that option because you're like, no, I want to have a clear preference. Actually, I recommend picking that. And I will say no more.
For reasons.
But anyways, we're going to talk about that more next week. And I don't want to get super into it. Plus, like, I'm liking it. I'm playing like a ton of it. It goes down easy. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say one more thing, because I know a lot of people will be listening to this wondering if they should get the game this week. I am actually enjoying the combat a lot more than I enjoyed in the last two games. And the main reason for that is because they built in this counter parrying system. The way that a Souls game might have, where if you parry at the right time, or Bloodborne might have, where if you parry at the right time, your enemy will be staggered back and you drain their stamina meter. And if you drain their stamina meter all the way, you can get in a stun attack, which not only does a ton of damage to them, but also regains some of your health. And then like hitting people with your regular attacks regains your stamina, but your heavy attacks takes away stamina. It's got this cool balance that I'm actually really digging. But yes, we can save this talk more for next week when we do our triple play on Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Nice. Maddie, what is your one more thing?
Okay, so I am going to talk about Destiny 2. Yeah. So you two might remember that I was part of a raid group a few weeks ago. We were trying to beat all the raids before Beyond Light came out. Beyond Light.
I'm trying to think if I can remember that thing that happened. I mean, it was 40 years ago that we talked about.
Usually, it was 40 years ago.
Usually, go into a fugue state whenever you talk.
Yeah, you guys don't listen to that part because you've never heard of Destiny 2.
No,
you don't know
what that game is.
And you don't care to learn anything about it. And I totally understand that because you've never played it. And right. I get it. Yep. So anyway, that all happened. But a few weeks ago, I had to review a video card for work. And then right after that, I had to review the baby Xbox for work. So it means I've spent the past few weeks playing a whole lot of different video games. And none of those video games...
I like the way that you just casually say baby Xbox. Like, you didn't even put emphasis. You're just like,
it's
the baby
called the Xbox. Baby Xbox. That's what it's called. I don't know. I don't even know.
I dig it.
That's what I call it all the time. So... I played a little Destiny 2, but only for the sake of testing these things, and I haven't really been playing with my friends these past few weeks. And so in that time, I told my raid group, at the beginning of it all, I'm going to have to do some hardware reviews, and I'm not going to have time to raid. So if you guys want to find an alternate for me for these next couple weeks, you can. Honestly, I didn't think they were going to do it, but they did.
No.
So here's how that went down. They found several alternates. They found several ringers who they brought in, and all of them have beaten all the raids. They've beaten them all, and I have not been a part of any of it. I'm still in the Discord. I've watched all of this happen in silence, and they have done a great job.
Are you sad?
Every now and then I go in, and I look at it, and I'm like, well, they're... They sure are doing it.
Passing
in there.
You by.
Love oh, my friends, and I am not doing any of this. And they're all going to buy those rings that you can buy when you've beaten the raid. You can like buy yourself a commemorative ring. Anyway,
and you're not going to have a ring.
And you're left out.
Have
it's
a ring.
So sad.
So yeah, none of this happened, and also now all the raids are gone because Beyond Light is launched. So I've missed.
Right.
The boat has been thoroughly missed.
You should
missed.
Just buy a ring anyways and just wear
and
it
just
like
be
the
like,
saddest.
Fuck you
person.
Guys. No, I'm not mad at them at all.
Of
this
course,
is like
of course.
This is sort of a. I'm not feeling sorry for myself here. Like, it is incredibly cool that I got to review a video card and the baby Xbox sure. and play these new games. And right. I'm not saying the past 3 weeks of my life have been hellish. It's not. Yeah, like this is not. It's not a relatable problem, perhaps. But in a way, I think it might be because I was busy with work these past few weeks. I was busy with commitments that could not be moved, and because of that, I couldn't play Destiny 2 anymore. And the ship has sailed without me, and now I feel as though I cannot return. And so Beyond Light launched last
Welcome
night.
Welcome to the club.
And all of my friends were in the game, and I did not even log in. They all watched the orb do its thing, and I just kind of watched on Twitter, and I was like, I remember 7,000 years ago when I played Destiny 2. That was another life that I had then. I don't even know that girl anymore, I thought to myself. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm at with Destiny 2 anymore. I might play it again, I might not, but it's been a weird time for me.
I think I love how you just keep having experiences that are so quintessentially Destiny 2, because this is one, the FOMO and also
yep.
the feeling that you've been left behind, like that you mowed
yep.
and thus the foe was justified and you have now missed out and like the game has moved
yep.
on, and that feeling of sort of, well, all your friends are playing and they're kind of talking about, oh, this thing that happened, or even just, you know, complaining
that I wasn't there for, and they all have their jokes,
yeah, they're complaining
so
about
on.
Some
yeah.
new thing that's annoying, right, and like you join them and maybe one of them has something on their banner that you've never seen before, like a gun, and
yeah.
it's just this feeling of like, oh, I'm not in the main group anymore. And it's a thing with service games in general, right, that they sort of demand this level of commitment, and
they
then they
do.
Socially
like,
reinforce it.
God forbid you have a work commitment of
yeah.
any kind,
right.
like you have to keep playing
yep.
like multiple days a week for weeks in order to keep up with a game like this,
yeah.
and I don't know, I'm kind of glad I got to have the experience for a few weeks of doing it and living it for a little while and feeling like I was part of something, but now I'm kind of like, there's a lot of other video games I'd like to play.
Follows that way with Destiny often.
Yeah.
Welcome. I will say I downloaded Beyond Light just to check it out.
Yeah.
I logged in for a second.
I feel like we gotta check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. I'm gonna
oh,
play
no,
the
I'll
campaign
play.
At least at some point. It might be a while because I have so many other things to get through. But I will say, so I logged in and checked my character and suddenly I'm like boosted to 1050 light.
Of
All
course,
my stuff is 1050
yeah.
light or power or whatever it's called. So you don't even have to think about catching up the way you have in the past, which is nice.
Well, right, but I've already missed out on the emotional catch up, which
right.
is the part that actually matters.
Right.
But yeah, you're right, my light level will be fine.
My point
so
is
that,
well, so Maddie, so in previous expansions, which you were not a part of because you only got into this game very recently, previous
mm-hmm.
expansions, not only do you miss out on what your friends are doing, et cetera, if you wanted to come in and catch up, you just logged in and you're like 100 light levels below everybody else and you're like,
yeah.
what do I even do now? Here, God. They're just like allowing everybody to be on the same
right.
bar.
Which is
so that
way
is nice.
Yeah.
So it's like nice
mm-hmm.
to be able to do that. In previous, in like Shadowkeep and Forsaken before that, they started adding power boost quests that you could do to like boost your gear up gradually. But now they're just boosting everybody, which is really, really nice. It's just like,
it is.
Like forget it. Like you can just get to this power and no problem. Just jump right in. Kirk, what about you? What's your one more thing?
I'm going to go last and I'm going to talk a little bit more about Watch Dogs Legion just because I've still been playing
cool.
some of it. I've been bouncing between that and Valhalla, and I just have a funny story I wanted to tell. There is an interesting comparison between these two games. I think that they really underline how you can have a Ubisoft-style open-world game and yet have completely different experiences in those two games. It's wild how different they are. Valhalla is so spread out and kind of low-key. Like, you kind of just... A lot of that game is just walking across the map going toward
mm-hmm.
a dot, and then you see a cool dot and you're like, what's that dot? And then you move and it's really
uh-huh.
pretty, but it's so
uh-huh.
like paced out and really kind of slow moving and just really kind of moves at that sort of a speed, where in Watch Dogs you're in London, everything is happening all around you, the whole world can be interacted with in like 1,000 different ways from any given point because you have this phone that can like manipulate 100 different things. You can jump into a camera, you can go over here, you can go over there, the world just feels like bristling with stuff.
There are dots everywhere.
Yeah, and every dot is you, potentially. Right. You can be any dot you want.
Well, and that's the other big difference, is playing this game where the difference between that and then a game where every NPC is the protagonist, and you know, you're doing this thing, the Watch Dogs does this unique thing of like building a team out of randoms. It's just also a very different rhythm where, I don't know, it's really different. I find it much more interesting and kind of it draws me in a lot more playing Watch Dogs, only because it's a new experience. When I'm playing Valhalla, I'm like, well, I've done this before, like leveling up this character, you know, getting my axe stronger and going and like getting some materials to like upgrade my thing, and now I'm a higher level and I get a new ability. Where in Watch Dogs, it's much more unknown to me because I'm still fairly early in it and still just finding it so striking how different it is. So the story I just want to tell really quick that's funny is, this is another kind of game reviewer problem stories. So Ubisoft gave me a code for this game and for Valhalla. And when they give review codes, they typically give you the one that like has the season pass and everything, because they don't. They're like, yeah, you should have all the DLC and stuff because you're in the press and you're gonna review it. So
have the best experience,
right? Yeah. So I have like the deluxe edition of this game, which comes with three super badass people that are on your team. This is in Watch Dogs. And to recap, I talked about this last week. We don't have a ton of time, but like you build your team out of NPCs in this game. So like you want to go recruit really good people, and everyone has different skills. And sometimes you'll find someone and it's like, oh, like that person's got super great skills that I really need. And you'll go out of your way to recruit them. And sometimes people just have like a car or something. Like they're just kind of a person. And you wouldn't recruit them unless you really wanted to. These three people are like legendary recruits or something. And they come with the deluxe edition if you bought it. The thing is, you can't fire them from your team. So it kind of, for me anyways, it like undermined a little bit of the energy at the beginning of the game, because I was starting out, I'm like, yeah, I got my one, this random lady who's like gonna build up DedSec from nothing, and then, oh wait, there's these three, like this badass hacker,
elite hackers,
yeah, this badass like assassin, and like this warrior guy who like is like a machine gun, and they're like, we're ready to go. And then they would turn up in my cutscenes and stuff, like I'd have my scrappy little team, and then like, you know, Rambo walks in and he's like, yeah, we're gonna get those guys. And I'm like, who are you? I didn't recruit you. No one wants you here. And obviously, anyone who bought the deluxe edition would like want this.
Would want them? Right. Hopefully.
I'm weird because I like just got this code from Ubisoft and happened to have this in my game. So first off, you can't dismiss them. First, I'm like, I want to just play the game pure. So what I had to do was I turned permadeath on and I went and just got them all killed. And that works if they die. I was worried. I was like, because maybe if you pay for
they
someone at the
back.
Store, you know, there's
yeah.
like a microtransaction store in this game. You can like buy people, teammates for your team. If they die and you lose them forever, like maybe it's like you're not getting your money's worth or something. But no, fortunately, if they die in the line of duty, they're just gone. I'm assuming.
I'm sure if you like reinstalled the game, you
exactly.
would have.
I think if you start a new game, they come back. So that was what I did. I just sent them each on suicide missions. I just like started shooting at the cops, and then I like ran into the street, and they're like, ah, and they died. And now I have a team of my own players.
That's
now.
So funny. So Kirk, so coincidentally, I just saw a tweet. I was just looking for it, but I couldn't find it, from a game developer a few days ago, being like, I wish that like some of this, like this pre-order DLC stuff is always the last to be added. It's always not balanced at all. Aww. It's like one of those things that is like an afterthought for game developers. So it's so funny that you're having that experience. And I'm sure so many other people have that experience where like you load into a game, especially a Ubisoft game, and suddenly you have this super overpowered weapon or character.
Right, the
and
starter
the
thing.
Developer is like, gave no thought to this whatsoever. It's like one of those things marketing demands of you at the last possible minute. You're like, oh, fine. Just like come up with this cool thing and throw it in the game. We're not even going to bother balancing this. And it's just like such a shame. It's one of those, it's like the optimal example of like marketing interfering with art and just
And I mean, usually it's like a gun or something that you can just not use. It's just funny that in this case, it's members of your team who turn
it's
up in cutscenes and stuff. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? Get out of here. You're not on my team. You're fired. Yep. Just go and get yourself killed. I'm like, have fun.
God.
So anyways, that's it for me. I'm going to keep playing that game though. I think it's really cool.
Good story. Good story. Okay. I think that is it for this week's episode. Don't forget to sign up for Max Fun. Become a member. Help support us. Don't forget to go check out the Discord.
Yeah, join our Discord.
Yeah, join us.
And don't forget to check out Kirk's other podcast, Strong Songs.
Yeah.
Kirk, have you ever thought about starting a sex podcast called Strong Schlongs?
I have not. Hmm. I've thought about wrong songs. People have suggested that for like,
a
podcast about bad music. But no, strong schlongs has never occurred to me, Jason.
Well, now.
I don't know why not. It's so obvious.
It does seem like I should have gotten there.
This is the content people get if they listen all the way to the end of the episode. They get the real stuff.
They get great ideas.
Down
trademark
and dirty.
Jason Schreier.
The Jason Schreier
one.
Brain diamonds just really start dropping here in the last minutes.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Kirk, Manny, see you both next week.
Yep, see you both next week.
Bye.
Triple Click is produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edited and mixed the show and also wrote our theme music. Our show art is by Tom DJ. Triple Click is a proud member of the Maximum Fun Podcast Network, and if you like our show, we hope you'll head over to MaximumFun.org/join and consider becoming a member. Doing so helps support us and gets you access to an exclusive Triple Click episode each month. Find us online at TripleClickPodcast.com, on Twitter at TripleClickPod, and send email to TripleClick@MaximumFun.org. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.